Nobody does it better than Regent Seven Seas Cruises. Enjoy all-inclusive, unrivaled luxury with unlimited shore excursions, indulgent cuisine, personalized service, and more aboard spacious all-suite ships. Visit rssc.com to experience the unrivaled.
News Talk Breakfast with Anton Savage.
In association with AIR.
The ESRI has done new research looking at the attitudes to climate change among different cohorts, particularly farmers versus non-farmers. And what they have found is that both cohorts are committed to and worried about climate change, and both cohorts underestimate how much the other set cares about climate change. With me is Professor Pete Lunn, research professor and head of the ESRI's Behavioural Research Unit. Let's start with the farming demographic. What did you find about their views?
Yeah, good morning, Anton. So it was interesting. I mean, we asked them how worried they were about climate change, and we also asked them how willing they were to change their farming practices. So we looked at the behaviours that are promoted by Chagask for greener farming, things like planting more trees and hedgerows and forestry, changing the kind of fertilizers that you use, using low emissions slurry spreaders, so changing the technology on the farm as well, those kind of behaviors. And what we found was that by a majority of about 2-1, farmers are genuinely worried about climate change. And I think given some of the changes we've seen in weather patterns, that's not hugely surprising, but nevertheless. But even more so, by imagine 3-1, actually, they expressed willingness to really change how they farm. So farmers are clearly worried about climate change and willing to change their behavior. But interestingly, we underestimate them. So we also surveyed a representative sample of the Irish public, both urban and rural. And when we asked them how much they think farmers are worried about climate change and willing to change their behavior, they underestimate them. And interestingly, the farmers underestimate the public too. So we all underestimate each other, really. It's as if all of us are changing our opinions as we see more and more. We're worrying more about climate change. We are willing to do something about it, but we assume that that's just us and that everybody else is still stuck in the past and isn't.
Now, Pete, are we right to underestimate each other? Because there is this constant divergence between what people say and what they do when it comes to environmental measures. People say they're eager to do stuff in respect of climate change, and the only point at which they do it is when subsidies or grants, obviously in the main, I mean, is when subsidies or grants or the economics of the decision work out making it cheaper.
Okay, Anton, that's a great question, but it's not true. So that's what everybody thinks. And what's so interesting about this is that a lot of climate action is collective. Right. People become willing to do it when they see that others around them are doing it and that other members of their community are doing it. Right. So often they'll express a willingness to change, but there are costs involved. You're right. And they have to think about that. And they really don't want to be the kind of perhaps the early adopter or the only mug in the street who's doing it. So it requires a collective effort. And part of the point of the study that we're publishing today is to show that if we can organize that collective effort, the willingness is there. If you leave it to individuals to make decisions that can involve a lot of expense and a lot of uncertainty, right, that's a hard way to do it. And a much better way to do it is to try to get people to collectively act. And actually, where you can see those kind of schemes happening around the country, and some of them are happening around the country, whether it's rewilding schemes, whether it's nature restoration schemes, whether it's community energy schemes, where people are changing the way they're doing things, right? Where it's more community-led, where it's more collective, you're more likely to have success. It's
now,
almost like...
Hang on for a second, Peter. I have never held a false belief to which I will not fully commit. So let me double down. How come then that when people are given the choices to do things like offset carbon for flights, they don't do it? How come we only see big pickups of EVs when they get to the point where the grants make them actually cheaper than internal combustion engine cars rather than marginally more expensive?
Look, don't get me wrong. Incentives help. But one of the reasons people don't pay carbon offsets is because they think no one else is paying the carbon offsets too. And that's one of the reasons why you have to have carbon taxation, which interestingly, our own research suggests is pretty widely supported. In other words, if everybody thinks that everybody else is doing it as well, we're much more willing to do it. Right. And you can see that with EV adoption as well. I mean, there's actually been a real increase in EV adoption in recent times. Part of the reason is because people see their friends doing it, they see others doing it, they feel more comfortable doing it themselves. So the whole point of the study that we're publishing today is really to try to show that the willingness and the attitudes are there. The difficulty is getting the coordination and the collective element to what we're trying to do so that people feel comfortable taking what are big and difficult decisions and, you know, things that are going to potentially be quite life-changing or changing their lifestyle in quite important ways. And it's understandable that people would be worried about that and that they're much happier to do it as a collective.
So does this go to sort of, is this Cialdini's thing of social proofs that once people see that there is a critical mass of others, they want to be part of that group?
It's partly what the social norm is, but it's partly just our instinctive understanding of the fact that when people act collectively, when we do things together, we feel more comfortable. Right. And that's something that behavioral scientists like me study in lots of domains. It's not just about climate. It's everywhere. You know, even in politeness is a collective action thing where we're polite to each other. But if someone else is not polite to us, we might withdraw that. We're much happier doing things when others are doing them, too. And we can see there's a collective benefit. Now, there's a really important point in all of this, which is that what that means is that if we sow seeds of division, it really undermines that effort. And one of the things we find in this study today that's really important, I think, is that there is no urban-rural divide in our data on either climate attitudes or willingness to change lifestyle. There's not a cigarette paper between the urban and the rural population. So what you hear about urban-rural divides on climate change, which, you know, we hear all the time, isn't true, right? It's just a lazy narrative that people assume is true. And when you actually look at the data, it isn't true. You will, of course, see some differences in terms of things like willingness to use public transport instead of the car, because people in cities have got access to far more public transport. But when it comes to willingness to change lifestyles on things like transport, diet, and energy, what you actually find is that the urban population and the rural population tell you exactly the same thing, that most of them are actually willing to do that.
Pete, thank you so much. Pete Lunn, Professor Pete Lunn, Research Professor and Head of Behavioural Research Unit at the ESRI. If you have a view, 53106 at a cost of 30 cent or 087 1400 106.
News Talk Breakfast with Anton Savage.
In association with AIR.
Weekday mornings at 7. News Talk. Conversation that counts.